This is a HeadGum Podcast.
While Andrew and Craig believe the joy of discovery is crucial to enjoying any well-told tale, they will not shy away from spoiling specific story beats when necessary. Plus, these are books you should have read by now.
Welcome to Overdue. It's a podcast about the books you've been meaning to read. My name is Craig.
My name's Andrew.
Holes. They're everywhere.
They're all around us.
They're out in space. They're in our own spaces.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, your sewer drain and your toilet and your sink.
Is a hole an object? Or is it the absence of an
what
object?
What is the only thing you can put in a barrel that makes it lighter? It is a thing. It is a thing we're thinking about. I'm sure the Greek philosophers thought about this.
About holes?
Well, just about, is absence a thing? I think about that when I was trying to, you know, my son isn't really ready for numbers, but we have a number puzzle that used to be your son's, and the number zero is on it.
Yeah,
and it's just struck me. I don't exactly know the history. I know it's like a thing you learn in school that, like, some people didn't know zero existed, but they still have numbers.
Well, I think for the purposes of the puzzle, it's there so that they can have an even number of numbers without having to do 10.
Yes, correct. So, I think that's true. Yes.
Or even you can experiment with the many double digit numbers that include a zero.
Yes, that's true.
That's where Henry got with it.
But yeah, I don't really know the history of people not knowing about zero, which is the whole of numbers.
It is the whole of numbers.
Let's hope this episode isn't a whole. Let's hope it's a good one.
Yeah, let's hope it's not the absence of podcasts.
This is our book podcast where each week one person reads a book and tells the other person about it. Andrew, what book did you read this week?
I read Holes by Lewis Sacker.
Yes.
A 1998 young adult novel that I cannot believe is named this.
I have a note about that. This was our patron's choice selection for April. If you want to get in on the voting for May when that poll is unleashed, you can.
Our listeners love Holes. What can you say?
They do. We did a trio of Disney, like, books that inspired Disney films. And we had, like, some more classic ones. And this one was out there. And people were like, whoa, that was Disney? I love that book.
Yeah, this one's the one with the most holes, I think, of all the three options that we gave people.
That is true. On his website, Lewis Sacker has both a biography and an FAQ section. Someone asked him, how did you think up such imaginative titles for your books? He said, the title is usually the last thing I think of, although the whole time I'm writing the book, I'm trying to think of what I'll call it. But I discovered how important titles were with the success of There's a Boy in the Girl's Bathroom. Prior to that book, I hadn't been that successful. I did read about that book. It's about a bully who gets caught, you know, going into the girl's bathroom by mistake, and then it sends him to a guidance counselor who changes his life. It's like,
okay,
because
it sounds like a thing that Ted Cruz would be mad about.
Yeah, I don't think. Yes, I honestly think he should maybe change the name of that book given the current political climate, but maybe he shouldn't. Maybe he should stick to his guns. He says. And that title got people to notice. I'm not always sure about the title. Quote, I didn't think Holes was a very good title. The other title that I considered and that my daughter wanted me to use was Wrong Place, Wrong Time, Wrong Kid.
That also it's a little too much.
It is too much.
I think Wrong Kid, I think the third.
Maybe just call it Wrong Kid?
Maybe. I mean, because the sequel is called, like, Little Small Steps or something. What's
Small Steps.
So yeah, Small Steps, published in 2006.
Yeah.
I don't know that I love that. I do agree with him though that Holes is and then they did a movie and they just also called it Holes.
It's kind of captivating as a title though. I can't not think about it, and I know exactly what it is.
Mm-hmm. And we're gonna have to say the word holes a lot.
Yeah. Start the tally.
During this episode. And we're gonna have to keep track of the difference between Holes the book, Holes the movie, and Holes the hole.
Yeah.
You know?
This is tricky. This is why we're professionals.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm excited.
Holes.
I've never read this book.
Sacker. You've never read Holes. I never read Holes.
I'd never seen the movie.
I am new to Holes. I'd never seen the movie with Shia LaBeouf and Sigourney Weaver and several John Voight and other people. Yeah,
yes. Written by Louis Sacker. He wrote the screenplay.
Oh, nice.
When the director, who's the same guy, Andrew David, I think is his name, he had also directed The Fugitive and a couple other adult films and, you know, adult like action movies.
And then he got the spec script for Holes, and he was like, I love it. I love adult films. I can't wait to do this.
He wanted to do something that was different and wanted to adapt this book. And so he hired, you know, he made sure they hired Sacker for it, which is kind of cool. It doesn't always happen that way.
Or else like the author gets like a sort of a
story
pass at the screenplay, and then they're like, okay, buddy, you can't do a movie, so we're going to have some... some guys who know the silver screen come and punch this up for you. And then the original author leaves upset about the treatment of their story. That's usually how it
goes. Our Percy Jackson series.
Yeah, or like the I think Roald Dahl had a sort of a similar relationship with the Charlie and the Chocolate Factory movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The first one he probably loved.
Yeah, the Gene Wilder
one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he was dead.
Sure. You know, so appropriate for loving it.
And dead and buried in a hole, I assume. Bringing it back to the Holes. What can you tell me about Louis Sacker?
Born in 1954 in East Meadow, New York, moved to... Oh, did you say he was the author of Holes?
Yeah, he's the author of the book Holes.
Okay, great.
And the movie Holes. Screenplay for the movie Holes.
Moved to California at age 9. He's born in New York, moved to California age 9. Credits J.D. Salinger and Kurt Vonnegut as early authors of inspiration. He went to Antioch College, I think that's in Ohio, briefly, but then he returned home after his father passed away. He sold door-to-door cleaning products in California. He went back to school at UC Berkeley for economics. Saw someone like passing out flyers for like, here's a program where you can be a school aide and get credit and not have to go to a real class. And he's like, that sounds fun.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out to be the thing that like changed his life. He spent time as an elementary school aide at Hillside Elementary, where he was the noontime supervisor. The kids called him Louie the Yard Teacher. and that was the inspiration for his very successful Wayside School series, the Sideways Stories at Wayside School, which I reckon we should come back to at some point. I'm kind of surprised we haven't read them by now.
Yeah, I'm surprised we haven't fallen down that hole.
You're right. Well, because sideways, you'd fall right out of the building. There's plenty of holes there. And he graduated in 1976, and as I said, created Wayside. He went to law school in San Francisco while Wayside was working its way through publication, and he spent the 80s doing, you know, part-time legal work while he was also becoming a novelist, and he was able to stop practicing law in 1989. Other novels include There's a Boy in the Girl's Bathroom, Marvin Redpost. Marvin, I think I got the victim of some iOS corrections. Marvin Redpost is his name.
Mm-hmm.
That series ran through the 90s. And then the Wayside series, of course, Sideways Stories, Wayside School is Falling Down. Wayside School Beneath the Cloud of Doom in 2020. Oh,
whoa. No. Whoa. Prescient. Could have been prescient. Could have just been just talking about what's happening. I don't know.
Other kind of tidbits from his website. I would love to know more as we talk about this book about the character Kate Barlow, Andrew, who he says is his favorite Holes character.
Mm-hmm.
So just want to put a pin in that. He talks about names. I guess we'll talk about the name of the main character once we get into it.
Yeah, we usually do.
You're right. We do. We don't leave that hole unfilled. He says, I've always believed that I learned to write for children by reading books written for adults. For instance, Kurt Vonnegut's Hocus Pocus and William Goldman's The Princess Bride influenced the way I wrote Holes. I liked the way the opening chapters of these books were sort of short and jumpy, how they led into the story, and The Princess Bride had these colorful characters and this bizarre setting, and that's sort of like Holes, he says. When asked if he would ever write books for adults, He said, I actually started an adult book, worked on it for about 2 years, decided it wasn't coming together. At that point, I went back to children's book and immediately started Holes. So, you know, the reviews I saw for this one do paint a picture of it as a kind of karmic, a comic but dark work.
Yeah.
Or at least touching on dark material in a lighthearted way.
And not, yeah, it is, this is, if you're talking about Louis Sacker, this is his dark materials, you know what I mean? I guess there are some things that are kind of funny. It's mostly pretty dark.
Okay.
Because it starts with a child being sent to like a concentration camp in the desert to dig holes. So, you know, I was not expecting it to get so serious so fast, and it did.
He said he was inspired to start the story because he had just moved to Texas and, quote, was miserable in the hot Texas sun. Texas has this reputation of being a strong law and order type state. I thought it would be interesting to write about a juvenile correctional camp. Okay, Louis.
Whoa, okay.
Then he kind of mashes up things from there. Book won the the 1998 National Book Award, the National 1998 Book Award for Young People's Literature, the Newbery Medal, the ALA Award. This one's just, I just put this one for fun to challenge myself. It was a nominee for the Deutscher Jugendliteraturpreis for Jugendbuch.
It's challenging everybody.
Yeah, I don't know what Jugendbuch
is. Mm-hmm. I mean, Jugendbuch is probably like
young,
you know,
book
from juvenile, like, yeah, books for young adults.
We referenced one of them already. There are two companion novels / sequels. There is Stanley Yelnats's Survival Guide to Camp Green Lake from 2003 and Small Steps from 2006 that explores the characters named Armpit and X-Ray.
Mm-hmm.
He said he was thinking about those characters while working on the movie Holes. Had an initial inkling of an idea where the both of them would see the movie Holes and be mad that they didn't get a piece of it.
That's, yeah, that creates a complicated relationship with reality, though.
Yeah.
Because in that, like, in that, is the movie Holes still based on the book Holes?
Great question.
And is the book Holes, like, a nonfiction in this universe?
Or is it, like, in the sequel, the movie was based on their lives?
Uh-huh.
You know, maybe something like that.
Yeah, I don't know.
But anyway, the movie was generally well regarded. As we said, it started.
I don't think it like blew the doors off anything, but it did fine. Yeah.
Well reviewed. It was supposed to be Frankie Muniz, but he was too busy filming Agent Cody Banks. So Disney said, "Well, we've got this kid who's in Even Stevens. Let's plug him in." Mm-hmm. I think I'm sure he also auditioned, but you know, and Ebert liked it. I think mostly.
Ebert likes movies.
He will praise movies for being what they are.
On their own terms, yeah. As we found out when we looked up the Roger Ebert review for the film Good Burger.
Yeah.
1997.
Yeah. It's a better movie than you might think if you haven't seen it before.
We had a really good watch of Good Burger 1 and only Good Burger 1.
We never saw Good Burger 2. It wasn't. No. It didn't play.
Yeah,
tried to click play on it. Didn't work.
Like a problem occurred is what the error message was.
Well, no problems here, Andrew. Let's take a quick break, and then you can tell me about Holes and the novel Holes. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Andrew, how's your social battery right now?
It's, you know how when you check your iPhone and it says you need to replace your battery soon because you've charged and discharged it too many times? It's kind of like that. It's at like 70% capacity.
But you know it means less than that?
It means less than that, and I'm just like, it's not lasting as long as it used to.
Yeah, man, it's tough to recharge that battery. And it's tough sometimes you ignore the battery meter, you spread yourself too thin.
Mm-hmm.
Right, because you don't necessarily know what's draining you or what's like recharging you.
And your cable breaks, and you got to order another one, and it takes like a couple days to get here, and got to turn on battery saver mode, and yeah.
This metaphor is really versatile.
This metaphor could really go. Yeah, it's got legs.
I have to tell you though that therapy can give you the self awareness to live your life in a way that does not drain your battery. I think that therapy is a great tool to talk through the relationships in your life and which ones energize you and which ones maybe take a little bit more effort. And I mean that lovingly. You know, I know some folks who come out of therapy sessions more grounded and prepared to show up in their relationships because they talk through how to be the best version of themselves in different situations, right? Like, you don't need to be the same person in your marriage as you do at work, or, you know, with your family members or different family members, you know, and therapy can help you kind of like sort through that so that your battery doesn't drain and that it actually charges when you plug it in. Mm-hmm. And you don't need to go to the Genius Squad to fix
that's
it.
That's really important.
Right?
Genius Squad, yeah.
The Geek Squad. Oh, my God.
The Genius Bar or the Geek Squad.
That's why I'm not charging my battery. I'm taking it to the Genius Squad, which doesn't exist.
Get it right or pay the price.
Oh, my God. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try, please. It's entirely online and designed to fit into your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire and then get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/overdue today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, BetterHelp.com/overdue. Where would you like to start, Andrew? Inside the hole or outside the hole?
I mean, I think we got to start inside the hole and then right outside the hole and then jump in.
Okay. Happy to.
Because that's where Stanley Yelnats starts.
Okay.
He's outside of the hole.
Who is Stanley Yelnats?
Stanley Yelnats, whose last name is Stanley spelled backwards. So let's just get that out of the way.
Yeah.
He is I believe he's a 14 or 15 year old boy who is accused of theft. It's a crime he did not commit, like the A-team.
Mm.
And he gets the option to go to Camp Green Lake, a juvenile correctional facility, to serve out his time.
The option? Does that imply something else could have happened to him?
Yeah, in chapter two, which is like one half of one page long to talk about Louis's thing for short, jumpy chapters. Stanley Yelnats was given a choice. The judge said, you may go to jail or you may go to Camp Green Lake.
Oh,
okay. Stanley was from a poor family. He had never been to camp before. But yeah, the camp thing kind of raises a kind of makes it sound fun, and it's not. Most campers weren't given a choice. Camp Green Lake is a camp for bad boys. If you take a bad boy and you make him dig a hole every day in the hot sun, it will turn him into a good boy. That was what some people thought.
Okay, I'm glad that Sacker included that because the logic there.
I just like bad boys and good boys. Because bad boys sound so cool, you know? Like, if you're talking about like America's bad boy, that's a compliment.
Yeah.
It's not something that you don't want to be. I would love to be America's bad boy, and I often am.
Yeah.
If you try to turn me into a good boy, I would refuse.
Yeah.
Anyway, that just struck me funny, the use of bad boys and good boys.
Well, what do you like? Tell us a little bit about Stanley. I have a quote here from a kind of a bloggy review on the National Association of Writers and Education's website.
Mm-hmm.
That says, unlike many books aimed at children, the protagonist actually has a personality. Sure, he is a good, dependable friend, but he also has a sense of humor and an unpredictable streak when he is pushed too far.
Yeah, Stanley is from a long line of guys also named Stanley Yelnats. Okay. And they've had bad luck for a long time, and they all kind of humorously, but with a grain of truth to it, blame it on their like great great pig raising grand. I forget the exact phrase that they repeat a few times, but it's their great grandfather who became cursed and cursed them with bad luck for all, like him and his descendants are cursed with bad luck for all time.
Okay. Apparently. All right. A family curse.
Yeah, no good, dirty, rotten, pig-stealing great-great-grandfather.
He stole pigs. Okay.
Stole a pig. Oh, the story goes. And so over these first two chapters, we put together that Stanley was accused of stealing some shoes. They were shoes from a baseball player named Clyde Sweetfeet Livingston.
Yes.
And Clyde Livingston had, like, donated these shoes to a charity auction.
Mm-hmm.
And they were going to be sold for like $5,000, and they were going to raise money for charity.
Okay.
And then Stanley was accused of stealing them, and then the judge just throws the book at him because he's a monster.
Yeah.
And Stanley feels wronged by this. Like, he's a fan of Clyde Sweetfeet Livingston. And these shoes just, like, flew off of a highway overpass and just, like, landed on him. And he, not really knowing what to do in a very relatable kind of way, just starts running, which automatically makes him look super guilty.
Yes, yes.
But
okay.
He couldn't just say these landed on me from out of the sky. Like, that's not an excuse that will hold up in court. And so the judge is like, okay, you will go to a concentration camp in the desert where you will dig holes in the sand for a maniac.
So now I'm wondering why the director, Andrew Davis, the director of the film The Fugitive, about a man who did not commit a crime famously, said, let me do something that's different from what I've done. I will adapt the novel Holes.
You see, this one's for kids. And Stanley's not a fugitive. He's caught, and he has to do his time.
Okay. That's what was different. He's like, I want to do a movie about a guy who gets caught. Mm-hmm. Okay, sure.
Stanley gets to Camp Green Lake, which humorously is a gigantic, barren desert with no water for miles and miles.
No green, no lake. Cool.
Yes. And it used to have water, but it doesn't now.
What does it have now?
Nothing. Sand and poisonous yellow lizards and holes.
I was going to ask, are there holes?
There are holes because there are a bunch of boys here. They all have nicknames that they've given each other, like Zero and X-Ray and Armpit and Ray. X-Ray. Yeah, so X-Ray's name is just Rex, the kid's real first name in Pig Latin.
Oh.
Because he there's not really anything going on with him. He doesn't really have anything going on.
What is Zero's
Squid,
deal?
Magnet, Zigzag, Ooh. Twitch. These are the kids.
Going live on Twitch.
I think we should talk about Zero's deal a little bit later because he's kind of the secondary character in the movie.
Okay.
Or I guess the book. And also probably the movie.
Does Stanley get the movie Holes? Does Stanley get a nickname?
Mm-hmm. He gets a nickname because he trips over a kid in their rec room after the first day out digging holes. Because every day, the thing about this camp is every day each kid has to dig a hole 5 feet deep. And 5 feet all around. Like you have a 5 foot shovel and you have to be able to put the shovel at the bottom of the hole and spin it all the way around without it hitting anything.
Oh my God.
And you have to do it every day. And it becomes like a humorous thing where everybody's like, oh yeah, the first hole is the worst one. Oh, the second hole is the worst one because you're all tired from digging your first hole. Oh, the third hole
is
the worst one. And
this
then you
kind
of eventually lose. Yeah, I know. That's why I was like, oh yeah, this is a fun kids movie with Sigourney Weaver and Shia LaBeouf. And I read this book and it's like, this boy is being tortured. He's going to die in the desert. How is this constitutional?
I remember reading about Robben's Island where they kept Mandela and you'd just be breaking rocks all day and then just moving the broken rocks around.
Yeah. It's very Oh brother, where art thou? Chain gang, labor for labor's sake punish people. That's not so. There is a method to this thing that's happening. But this is his time at Camp Green Lake.
Okay.
He's with these boys who are all as you recall, bad boys go to Camp Green Lake, and sometimes if a bad boy digs enough holes, he becomes a good boy.
I wonder
and
if so they thought about calling the movie Bad Boys, but then they were told they couldn't.
Because there are other
several movies,
properties named Bad Boy. Maybe Bad Boy / Good Boys? ?
I'm into it.
Maybe that would be a good name.
More titles with question marks.
Yeah, more titles with question marks. You always get the end ? Why can't I? Why don't you start the movie with a question mark?
The beginning ? What a movie!
Think about it.
That's Tarantino, baby. He should do that.
So Stanley's at this camp. He's, he is a good boy who's been wrongly accused at a camp with a bunch of boys who are presumably actual bad boys.
Bad boys.
Who actually did the thing that they are accused of. And so he's, he's having to navigate the politics of this institution.
But is he a rapscallion or is he a
Stanley's not really a rapscallion. He's kind of he's not really a go along to get along type either. He just is he's a quiet, kind of don't pay attention to me kind of guy, I think. I feel like in a lot of ways. And this is, so Stanley's described as like a bigger guy. He's kind of a fat kid.
Yeah.
And yeah, like as somebody who was that in like middle and elementary school into like high school, and I'm also like still super tall, I'm just, there's something inside me that is super self-conscious about the amount of space that I take up in any given room. And it makes me shrink from like from making a display of my from like drawing attention to myself unless I'm in an environment where I'm like comfortable or
have to a live show
where like we've told people to come and look at us in a room, and so I have to be I have to be look attable.
So you're like, is there like an identifying trait to Stanley in that way to you, like you?
Yeah, like I saw a little bit. I saw a little bit of myself in Stanley there, and it's his family is poor. His dad is kind of a, you don't see a lot of his dad, but you, if you did see more of him, you would get a an image of him as a kind of wacky inventor type, sort of a Rick Moranis from Honey, I Shrunk the Kids before he gets all that funding for the big ray that you see in Honey, We Blew Up the Kid.
Yeah,
just
work, sure.
Just tinkering in his attic with a
tinkering dad. Right, yes, okay.
But he's trying to make shoes that don't stink, which ironically makes their house smell really bad because he's just taking all these old shoes and he's these old stinky shoes and he's doing stuff to them.
Before I ask you a question about,
I haven't answered the nickname question.
Oh please,
yet. This has all been prefaced
keep going,
to
keep
the
going.
Nickname.
Oh sorry,
question.
Sorry, sorry.
Anyway, so Stanley's in this this scenario with all these kids. And he trips over somebody, and the kids start being like, "Oh, you don't want trouble with caveman." And Stanley assumes that they are talking about the kid who he tripped over, and they're telling him, "You don't want to get in trouble with caveman." And then it becomes clear at the end of that chapter, "Oh, I am caveman. This is the nickname that they've given me."
What?
Yeah, everybody just picks up a nickname.
Yeah.
Even the counselors get nicknames. Mr. Sir is the mean counselor, and Mr. Pendansky's nickname is Mom because he's like the nice counselor.
Yeah, that's a trope I think is I'm familiar with in these types of stories where it's like either a boarding school situation or some sort of, you know, cloistered community of boys, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so what you're I answered the caveman question finally.
So
what other questions do you have that I can take 7 minutes to get around to
answering? This is useful. This is good. This is the podcast. Please, falling down holes.
Just,
come on.
Listen, we're just digging into this book.
Yeah.
We're digging until we're exactly 5 feet deep and we can spin our shovels around 5 feet on all sides.
Can I fit this microphone in the hole and spin it around? He said that when he came up with Stanley's name, he didn't feel like figuring out a last name, so he just spelled his last name backwards and figured he'd change it later.
Yeah, and in the book, that's kind of reverse engineered because when his family like came over from whatever old country they were in, the pig stealing great great grandfather whose name is Elia Yelnats, his wife who he marries and has children with thinks that Stanley's a nice name because it's Yelnats spelled backwards.
That's really clever. So my question is, how does the novel, and this maybe can kind of break open the story a little bit, how does the novel actually tell us about stuff that is not happening at Camp Green Lake?
You get, so this is my thesis about this book, which I've seen said, but I have not seen a lot of like
scholarship
about it or like, you know, serious interviews. It's just like kind of people musing, is that Holes is kind of a baby's first magical realism book in a lot of ways. And I don't want to be, you know, the guy with the butterfly meme where like anything weird happens. And I'm like, is this magical realism? But there were a lot of things in this book that reminded me of the magical realism stuff that we've done for the show. Like your loves in the time of cholera and your hundreds years of solitudes.
Listen, someone was on r/books asking this question 5 months ago, Andrew. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, people are everybody's talking about it. Is Hole's magical realism? I don't know.
I only saw references to it aside from like community discussions in listeners may remember there's a thing called condensed learning and there are websites devoted to it. So mm-hmm. when I was Googling this, because you had mentioned it, I was only finding kind of major hits mm-hmm. on your course heroes, your schmoops, your websites that are helping you read the novel Holes.
Yeah.
As it is assigned to you in class. Because
teaching it as magical realism doesn't happen, and so you're not going to find it on Schmoop taught as magical realism.
Well, that's where I was finding it.
Oh, that is where you found it. Okay,
what I'm saying is like that's the only place other than like Reddit forums, you know,
okay,
Reddit
threads. Sure.
It does not seem to be part of the like critical discourse on Holes. Yeah.
Yes, so you will hit a chapter, and then it'll go for a chapter or two where you are suddenly back in time with Elia Yelnats, who is Latvian.
Okay,
Wikipedia informs me, and he's in love with a girl in his village, and but he can't get her attention. You know, like there are other suitors who are trying to get her attention.
All been there,
and so he goes to an old fortune teller named Madame Zeroni. Who says, take this little like runt of a pig that nobody wants and you feed it and you carry it up this mountain every day and you let it drink from a spring and you sing to it. And by the time the pig is grown, it'll be the biggest, coolest pig and the girl's dad will take it as the dowry and you'll get to marry the woman that you love. And so he does this for many days. He and he's like, a full-grown pig is pretty heavy, like is this not gonna become like really hard to do?
Yeah.
And she's like, if you do it every single day, you're just gonna get stronger as the pig gets bigger and you're just gonna be able to carry the full-grown pig.
I do kind of like that.
I kind of like that as kind of a workout sort of thing. the big workout.
The new iOS mm-hmm. update has a circle for carrying a pig up a mountain.
Yeah.
That you got to mm-hmm. fill every day.
Yeah. And then it notifies you at like 4:07 p.m. It's like, usually you've carried more pigs up a mountain by now. Is everything okay?
Been in a lot of meetings today, phone.
And so he does this except every day except so Madame Zeroni is like, okay, I am asking you to do this, and as repayment to me, the zany old fortune teller, you are going to carry me up the mountain, and you're going to let me drink from the spring because I've always wanted to do it, but I can't do it because I don't like I'm missing a leg.
Okay.
And he promises he's going to do it, and he carries the pig up the mountain every day, but the last day, and he goes to the girl's father, and he's there with another guy. And they're being judged based on the bigness of their pigs. And their pigs are both exactly the same size because he didn't do it the last day. He should have done it the last day. And he would have had the biggest pig. And then the girl's father is like, okay, these two boys have both exactly the same size pig. So I don't know, Myra, who do you like? And she's like, I don't. She just kind of waffles between the two of them. And Elliot is like, oh, actually, this girl doesn't love me. And even though Madame Zeroni tried to warn me that she was kind of shallow in that way, I was so besotted with her that I just didn't notice. And now the illusion's been broken, and I have to get out of town.
Oh no!
So he decides to leave, and it's not until he is. So he did not. I think often in these kinds of stories where somebody like promises something to some old magician and then doesn't do it.
Yeah.
Like there's something about how they need to like change as a person and become less of a bad guy themselves.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like that trope. And Elia like legitimately just is really sad and forgets until it's too late that he did not carry Madame Zeroni.
Yes, sure.
Up the mountain to drink from the stream.
Yeah.
And so.
But she curses curse. Him?
Yeah. Her curse on his family is just like, you'll have bad luck forever.
Oh no.
So you get this in a couple of chapters, like after you've met Stanley and you kind of get a little established with him, you get these couple of chapters that give some background to why Stanley and his family seem like they're so down on their luck all the time.
Okay.
And this is where sort of the magical, this is like exhibit A for the magical realism is like this curse from Stanley. This curse from Stanley's past that seems to be literally true. Camp Green Lake did used to have rain and green and a lake, but it doesn't anymore because it's not rained there for like 100 and something years. There are other elements of it too that we'll get to, but like these two big things that define this book that are the way they are because of bad stuff that happened in the past. And it's taking place
in our world, right? Like he's from Latvia, like, you know, there's not a lot of extra world building going on.
Yeah, and he's like a boy who was accused of a crime and he has to go to juvie to like do his time.
Yep.
And all of these boys are like, they're heightened, but they're, you know, they're recognizable archetypes of like teenage boys.
Sure. Yes.
It's, you know, it's like a magical realism thing. It is grounded, but then there are heightened circumstances that kind of draw attention to themselves.
Okay.
I was on the Masterclass website.
Oh,
looking
sure.
at the What is Magical Realism article.
Yeah, yeah.
But my favorite, like, very short explanation of what it is defined as is from a Reddit explain it like I'm five thread.
Oh, okay.
And somebody says, so you're five, you're at preschool, and a doggy comes up and talks to you. The two of you have a little adventure. The adventure is the interesting part of your day and not the talking dog.
Yeah. Huh. I like that.
Yeah. So the other big story that you get interspersed between Stanley chapters, and I'll say is Stanley is mentioned a couple of times, this woman from his family's past named Kissing Kate Barlow. And we've heard about her in the context of the family's bad luck, is that Stanley's like the first Stanley Yelnats, so Elia Yelnats's son, made a bunch of money in America and seemed to be doing pretty well. But then he gets robbed by Kissing Kate Barlow and left in the desert.
Okay.
And so we go back in time to the year 1888, where Green Lake is green and it's a lake and it's a thriving community, and Catherine Barlow is a teacher who everybody likes, who is like the only teacher in town. She makes like peach jam or peach preserves that everybody really likes.
Which one's which? I never know.
And she and she falls in love with a guy named Sam, who is black. And they kiss, and all the white people in the town get mad about it because of racism.
Yeah.
And there's a guy in town named Charles Walker who assumes, like, because he's the richest guy in town, that he has his pick of whoever he wants, so he's gonna marry Kate Barlow. And she rejects him.
He should have had a bigger pig.
He should have had a bigger pig, and she's seen kissing Sam. And so Charles Walker, whose nickname is Trout, these nicknames go all the way back to the olden times.
Everybody's got one.
Trout burns down the schoolhouse. And Catherine's trying to go to people in town to ask for help, but they're all like, oh, well, if you'll kiss Sam, then you could kiss anybody. You should kiss me. And after all this stuff, and Sam is, they try to leave, but Sam is killed by like a mob.
Oh, God.
And Kate, it comes back to her later, and she's like killed the sheriff, and she's left a kiss on his corpse because he's one of the people who asked, who was like, you gotta kiss me because if you'll kiss Sam, you'll kiss anybody.
This is all still in the novel Holes by Lewis Sacker.
It got so much more, it goes so much harder than I was expecting it to go.
My God. Okay.
And this is how she becomes this outlaw.
Okay.
Because, you know, and it is, this is the other magical realism thing, is I think an important element of a lot of the magical realism that we've read is like this sort of intergenerational element.
Yes.
Where you hop around in time a lot and you see different pieces of these puzzles interlocking as you learn more about like the history of the family and the present of the family. And yeah, I think I'm thinking of Love in the Time of Cholera a lot. Like that's the one it reminds me the most of, but I know there are others that we've read like that.
I think you read the Isabel Allende, which is another good example. But I'm sure we've talked about this. The thing that's occurring to me right now is that like the fact that it's intergenerational feels really useful and crucial to allowing the magic stuff to happen,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
because a family legend can then, like, in the real world outside of a novel, a story within your family can then, like, cause people to behave ways,
yeah,
based mm-hmm. on their, like, understanding of the way the world works.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you put it in the context of a fictional story, you can then just, like, make that part real, which just heightens why people behave that way because of the story. Or, you know, like, our you know, you could say, my great-great-grandpa stole a pig and made a lady mad, and now we're cursed. Mm-hmm. And, like, that could just be a thing you think about your family.
Mm-hmm.
And Holes, the novel by Lewis Sacker, asks, what if that's true? What if that really did happen to someone?
Yeah, and so when all that stuff happens to Kate, it also is another curse. And that so the day all that stuff happens is the last day that it rains on Green Lake.
Oh.
And it all dries up. And so, like, a couple decades later, she comes back to Green Lake because she's buried some treasure there or something. And Trout and his wife are still there, but they have fallen on hard times because there's nothing in the town that anybody wants anymore. And they tell Kate, okay, try to show us where the treasure is. Like, you gotta do this for mm-hmm. us or we're gonna kill you.
Mm-hmm.
And Kate decides she doesn't want to do that. She lets, like, a little poison yellow lizard from the desert, like, jump up on her and bite her. And she basically is like, you could dig holes forever and never find my treasure in this desert.
Oh no.
Yeah. And so that's why they're digging the holes. It's because the warden of Camp Green Lake is another Walker. It's a descendant.
Oh man.
Of Charles Walker. Louise Walker is her name, played by Sigourney Weaver in the film May.
In the film holes. At what point do you, the reader, find this stuff out before Stanley does? Like, I was thinking Sam Witwicky from Transformers, because that's also Shia LaBeouf. My God.
Like, it's you. Okay, let's jump back a little bit.
Because I'm also just kind of like, what is up with Stanley?
We're not talking about Stanley so much. So Stanley is told when he gets there, if you dig up anything interesting, bring it to, you know, the counselors, bring it to the warden. And if it's interesting enough, they'll give you the rest of the day off.
Cool.
And so Stanley finds what I think ends up being like a bullet casing or something that says KB on it. It's some kind, either a lipstick or a bullet casing or some kind of like cylindrical golden thing.
Okay.
That has the initials KB on it. And so he has this, you know, this tickles something in his brain. Like, he's trying to remember KB, like there's a specific, like, handwriting that it's in that is reminding him of something.
Sure.
And he doesn't realize for a while, but he finally does get back to, oh, this family legend that I've got about kissing Kate Barlow. Maybe KB stands for Kate Barlow.
Okay. Okay.
I think, like, the improbability of all these plot lines, like, intertwining is not, like, explicitly magical realism, I don't think, but when taken with all the other stuff, it does all feel very, like, predestined and magical.
Yeah.
But so Stanley has found this thing, but instead of turning it in and trying to get a day off for himself, like, he's trying to curry favor with, I think X-Ray is the leader of the boys.
Okay.
And X-Ray said, because Stanley finds, like, a fossil and he takes it to the counselor, and the counselor's like, oh, that's neat. But it's not, they don't give him the day off because it's not interesting enough. And X-Ray is like, man, next time you find something interesting, you should really give it to me first. And Stanley's trying not to rock the boat. He's trying to, like, not to have all the other boys at this camp resent him because he has to live here with them.
Yeah.
And he decides, okay, next time I find something interesting, I guess I'll give it to X-Ray. So he finds this cylinder thing and gives it to X-Ray, but it's too late in the day. Like, if X-Ray gave them the thing now, and he would only get, like, an hour off. And Stanley has the idea of, you should just, like, hide it on your person somewhere and hand it in first thing tomorrow morning. And then you get the whole day off, and everybody's like, oh, caveman, you're all right. This is, you know, Stanley's, you know, going up in everybody's estimation because he seems like a good dude.
Okay.
Who's done this thing. So the next day, X-Ray pretends to have found the thing in the hole that he's digging. The warden comes out, makes them dig the hole so big. Like, it's this is when you, the reader, sort of really get clued into the fact that they're not, this isn't just like a Sisyphean punishment thing that these boys are being made to do in the desert. Like, the warden is looking for something, and because one of the boys found the specific thing, she thinks that what she's looking for must be buried nearby. But because they think that X-Ray found it in his hole, and it's not the hole that Stanley dug the other day, they're looking in the wrong place. So they don't find the thing. But Stanley has kept... Stanley has kind of earmarked the real hole in his brain because he doesn't... Like, maybe he can tell the warden about it in a way that doesn't get everybody in trouble and gets him, you know, the day off, or... Just like maybe it will be useful for him in the future to just know which hole it is that he found this thing in. But sure. He doesn't tell anybody because he doesn't want to get in trouble with the warden for lying. He doesn't want to get in trouble with the X-Ray for like ratting him out. So he's kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place.
A hole in a hard place.
So now let's talk about Zero, I guess, unless you have other cues.
I'm glad to have gotten the update on Stanley. And that this kind of backstory is interwoven with an actual like plot that is occurring at the camp, which was the question I had. So, okay, tell me about Zero.
So Zero, yeah, doesn't have a lot of friends. He's a black kid who is at this camp and doesn't really, he doesn't really socialize very well with the other kids, but he kind of takes a little bit of a shine to Stanley because Stanley is like reading and writing letters to his mom, and Zero's like, I don't know how to do that. Can you teach me how to do that? And I'll help you dig your holes. And because the book is called Holes, and so there's a lot of holes in it.
Yeah, of course.
And so Stanley starts helping Zero learn how to read, and in exchange, Zero starts digging Stanley's hole for like an hour during a day, and that starts making the kids like resent him a little bit. And eventually things come to a head. So this is happening sort of unbeknownst to the counselors, but the counselor mom, who's supposedly the nice counselor. Even though he's the nice counselor at like the whole concentration camp in the desert. So like, you know, take nice with a grain of salt, I guess.
Sure.
Mom says that Zero is too stupid to learn how to read. And so Zero takes a shovel and whacks him in the head with it and runs off.
Oh.
Yeah. And so he is, you know, he's out in this desert, Zero is. And you don't, you're still with Stanley in this. Like, you don't flash over to Zero's perspective. So you assume that Zero, or like all the campers assume that Zero is dead out there somewhere.
Yeah.
And they just get back to their hole digging.
Great.
And Stanley feels bad about this. So one day, like, Mr. Sir has come by with his water truck to like give them water. And Stanley just like steals the truck and tries to drive off with it. But then he drives it into a hole and crashes it. And then he just like gets out and runs.
Oh, no.
Because he wants to save Zero, and because he has seen, like, there were a couple days before, there was like a thunderstorm off in the distance, and he saw something outlined against the sky that looked like a thumb. And so he's already thinking about this Kissing Kate Barlow story. And the part of the family legend that has been handed down is that the first Stanley Yelnats was found, and he was thought to be kind of delirious, and he said that he only survived by like hiding under God's thumb. And
like,
so
there's like
Stanley,
maybe a shadow or something, you know.
Yeah, so Stanley sees like this thing in the sky that reminds him of a thumb, and he's like, man, I gotta chase this down because this feels like something. So he goes out, he finds Zero, who is like surviving off of these ancient like peach preserves that he's found.
Sure.
Which he calls Sploosh, which we don't need to talk about anymore. We don't need to talk about the substance Sploosh from the book Holes.
We do not.
Is what I am saying to you.
Yeah, that sounds good to me.
But Stanley has found Zero, who is just like barely hanging on, and they keep making their way up to this like thumb, because, you know, people aren't really searching for them. Like, they're just kind of missing, assumed dead on the part of all the campers and counselors and everything. And so by this thumb, they find sort of a verdant little like there are weeds and like bugs and like signs that there must be some kind of water source nearby.
Yeah, sure.
And so this is another sort of magical realism-y thing, is they like dig far enough into the ground and they just find all these onions buried in the ground. Because if you remember Sam from the Kissing Kate Barlow story, who Kate Barlow was kissing.
Yeah.
He was an onion. He's an onion farmer.
Oh.
And so there are just all these wild onions out there.
Yeah.
That they find when they dig down far enough.
Sure.
And so these two boys live off of onions.
Blooming
for several
onions.
Days. Yeah. They just eat all these onions and they live off of onions for a while. Which I don't, if I were starving in the desert, I'm sure I could eat an onion like an apple and survive off of it. I bet after a few days of doing that, it would not even seem especially weird. Cause I like onions. It's just, you know, a raw onion is a taste, you know,
according
it makes your tummy kind of hurt sometimes to eat too many raw onions.
According to the USDA, one medium onion has 44 calories, contains 4% of your daily value of potassium, 3% of your daily value of carbohydrates, 7% daily fiber, 1.2 grams of protein. Not a lot of protein,
but I've got to assume that there's at least like a good amount of water in an onion. Like onions got to be mostly water.
A lot of water and 13% of your daily vitamin C intake.
Oh, interesting.
So, you know.
So if you ate a bun, like a lot of onions.
You're definitely not getting scurvy.
No.
Your breath smells terrible.
Breath smells terrible and you probably are having gastrointestinal issues. I mean, I think surviving on any individual food for long enough is probably going to give you some wicked gastrointestinal issues.
Your gut biome is like just really shutting down.
Stop with the onions, please?
It's like a supply chain failure where like, you know, all of a sudden too many people want toilet paper and the whole thing breaks. It's like your gut biome is like, we can't just eat onions. There's too many different bacteria.
And the issue is that all the businesses shut down, and so all the commercial onions are like there's enough onions for everybody.
But we can't just move them. They're all the
onions,
same trucks.
Yeah, the commercial onions can't just be reallocated to the consumer onions. Anyway, onions.
This was what the 2020 Wayside School book was about.
Onions is one of the foods that has its own wrapper. Is my point.
Like a banana.
Yes, you could. So you dig in onions out of the dirt, and it's not like you're eating a dirty onion. You just take off the first couple layers.
Yeah.
Now you're talking onions.
Sounds
baby.
Good to
like,
me.
That's a good onion. You eat that.
Yeah.
So they're eating a bunch of onions, and they go back. They decide to go back to camp. Because they have a conversation. I think it is at this point that you learn that Zero's real name is Hector Zeroni.
Whoa.
And so while Zero is kind of fading in the desert, Stanley has like a I can't carry it but I can carry you moment.
Good.
Where
yes.
Stanley carries Zero up the mountain and then lets him drink.
Yes.
And we later find out that like at this exact moment is when Stanley's dad invents super good like insoles that make your shoes smell great. Like this has broken the curse to do this.
Like worldwide, the curse is lifted.
Yeah, the Stanley Yelnats curse is broken.
I dig.
But yeah, again, more magical realism, more intergenerational stuff, more just like more supernatural stuff happening. They go back to the camp. There's a confrontation where the warden is like, okay, Stanley, because Stanley, I think, comes clean to her about where the thing came from.
Sure.
And she's like, okay, dig. And then they find a suitcase. And the warden wants the suitcase, but the boys are hiding in the hole and they're covered with these yellow lizards that we've been told many times are so poisonous that they're going to kill everybody.
Okay.
But they're not killing the boys for some reason. But the warden and her lackeys do not want to come close to the boys to take the suitcase
because the lizards
are there. And at this point, Stanley's lawyer and the state attorney general, I think, of Texas. And this is the other magical realism thing, is like, imagine the attorney general of the state of Texas doing something good in the world,
benefiting a child.
Yeah. Anyway, they come and they say, Stanley, you've been cleared. We're here to collect you.
At this point, is the ruse of the camp exposed? Is that what's going
on? Yeah, the ruse of the camp's kind of exposed because when Zero disappeared in the desert, the warden was like, yeah, destroy all the records of him. There's nobody who's going to miss him. Just like act like he wasn't here. And now Zero's come back and these authority figures have also come and they're like, okay, Stanley says he won't leave without Zero. Can you bring me Zero's records? And they're like, I can't find him. Can't find the records for some reason.
Great. Cool.
The warden also tries to claim that Stanley has stolen her suitcase, but they look at it and it says Stanley Yelnats on it. And so they don't believe.
Oh my God.
They don't believe that the warden.
The name. That's so good.
So they have found in the desert this like fortune that Kiss and Kate Barlow stole from the first Stanley Yelnats like many, many, many years ago. And then the yellow lizards like attack the counselor because they wouldn't attack the boys because it turns out that the lizards don't like onions and these boys have been eating nothing but onions for days and days.
That's so stupid. Okay. I love it.
And so the lizards don't like kill anybody or anything. It doesn't get that dark, but they do, Stanley and Zero do go with the authority figures. And as they are driving away, rain starts to fall for the first time.
Sure.
In over 100 years.
All right.
And then everybody lives happily ever after. The camp gets closed.
Yep.
We learn that the warden's last name is Walker. So related to Trout from before.
Sure.
Stanley's dad is, well, first that suitcase has something worth like a couple million bucks in it.
Great.
And so Stanley and Zero split that money. Stanley's dad is now a successful inventor because he's invented a cool foot stink product that they named Sploosh because it smells like peaches. And then at the end of the book, they're at a party and Sweet Feet Clyde is there at the party, having forgiven everybody for everything that's happened. And that's the end of the book.
Does he get to use some of the Sploosh?
No, I mean, Sweet Feet does.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Yes.
Yeah. Because he's got the stinky feet.
I don't want my feet to smell like peaches.
I can think of a lot of things I would like my feet to smell like less, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
fair enough. I want like onion feet. Like these boys who've been out eating onions in the desert for years.
I don't want onion feet. I don't want holes feet. I don't know if I want Sploosh feet, though.
I think I've been kind of all over the place in my plot, but that's kind of what happens when a book goes out of order and you discover things as you read it and then you have to talk about it and like re-piece it all back together in a way that is interesting for an audience.
Made perfect sense to me, I guess. Are you saying that, because you kind of like ran through Kate Barlow and ran through Elia Yelnats, like, kind of in order in our conversation, are those broken up more across
those are broken
the novel?
Up. So it's like Stan, you get some Stanley chapters and then you get the Elia Yelnats thing and then a bunch more Stanley chapters and then you get the Kiss and Kate Barlow story.
Okay.
And then more Stanley to close it out. Like you are the Stanley chapters breadcrumb some of the stuff. So by the time you run into Elia Yelnats in Elia Yelnats' story, you have heard something about him before through Stanley, because Stanley's talking about his like no good pig stealing great great grandfather.
Yeah. Okay.
So you know, Stanley's telling you about this, and then the author zooms over to this other chapter here's the rest of the story. You know,
sure, that makes sense to me.
I know the author's name is Louis Sacker. I just was thinking about like the author as the driving force of a
the
narrative.
Author in the novel Holes,
of the novel Holes, yes,
by Louis Sacker.
But yeah, like it, I probably would have really liked this book as a kid
because
I really liked it now. But yes. It goes so much harder than I thought it was gonna go. I thought it was just gonna be like a book about a bunch of boys digging holes and like finding friendship with each other, but it is not that. That is not what the book is about.
I knew just the premise that it was based in punishment, and that's about all I knew.
Mm, like so much of life.
I had no idea about the kind of magical realism thing or even like what the nature of the plot was. Andrew, can you just respond real quickly to this Common Sense Media
This is the sense of a gotcha question.
Can you respond to this? This is, there's some positive reviews on Common Sense Media. There's, just like it's a little too dark for younger kids. Kids love it. Maria says, 5 stars. I have read this book to my 5th grade students many times. It is a great book that teaches discipline.
Whoa.
What?
No.
Maria.
Unless you were turning around and telling your kids, and yeah, unless you behave, I'm going to make you dig holes like the boys in Holes.
Maria?
Not the lesson to draw from Holes.
Yeah, I don't know, man.
I think so the other elements of magical realism that the Masterclass article talks about is that it's this jumping around in time, which, yes, this is doing. And then the other one is that it has some kind of like a critique or a statement to make about something. I don't know that this really has that too much.
Other than the general notion that like a correctional concentration camp for kids is bad.
Yeah, that's the main thing is like for a YA book from the late 90s by a middle-aged white guy, like it does brush up against like issues of race and like issues about the carceral system, but it's not trying to say the carceral system is bad. It's just saying all of these boys have to dig these holes in this desert and it seems cruel and it's just that's just what's happening. So like come on with me.
Sure.
But yeah, mostly I'm responding to like the structure of it and the like lightly supernatural elements of it that you just kind of assume to be true. I mean, not only so you have the big stuff like the curse from Stanley's past, no rain in Camp Green Lake. The warden has like poisoned fingernail polish that she like slashes a guy with.
Sure.
They do the thing where they eat nothing but onions to live for days and days. And then you've got the spotted lizards who are super poisonous, but also hate onions. And yeah, so you've got all this stuff that is kind of like wild on its face that you just kind of assume you register them as true and then you move on with what the story is about. Because the story isn't really about those things. Those are just things that happen in the story. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a pretty positive review in the New York Times from 1998 by Betsy Hearn. The word that she uses is folkloric. Both in that type of stuff and also just like the way that it unfolds its story and the ways that it uses repetition and things like that. Also praises it as a jigsaw puzzle, quote unquote, that middle graders will want to solve, and then takes the time to compare it to things like Tuck Everlasting and other, what she calls, quote, flawless children's novels, many of which appeal to girls.
Have you ever read Tuck Everlasting?
It was good. I read it for the show. It was good.
Oh, you read it for the show? Okay, yeah. Cool.
It's about it's about a kid who doesn't age. I
was just thinking about my cool invention of a shirt that never comes untucked that you call the Tuck Everlasting. And I know I've made that joke on the show before, but it's probably been like a few years. So there you go again, everybody.
She says that like, most of those books are meant to, or at least they appeal to girls, but boys might enjoy them when they read them for class. And she says, this is, quote, written by a man and projects magnetic attraction for boys, but make sure the girls don't miss out on it. Like, it's a good book for boys, and it fits
into the... How about we just say it's a good book for kids? But I get that it's, like, boy-centered.
And that like, in the genre of middle-grade literature that this is playing in, that many of them kind of, traditionally are pitched towards, young women.
Well, I think a lot of kids, because of society, are kind of, like, self-sorting.
That's also true, yes.
By the time they're reading these kinds of books, yeah.
So to have one that's like, hey, boys like it. Boys like digging holes.
Boys love digging holes. Boys and meth addicts. Much like the book Holes, I am prepared to go hard at unexpected times. And you just have to deal with it.
Okay, well, that's the book Holes, everyone.
That's the book Holes. It goes really hard. Thank you, Louis Sacker, for the book Holes.
Thank you. If you, the listener at home, ever dug a cool hole, tell us.
If there are any holes in my synopsis of the book Holes.
Hey, send us an email, overduepod@gmail.com. Hit us up on social media @overduepod. Blue Sky and Instagram is where we're spending most of our time. You might find us in other places. Our theme song is composed by Nick Larangis. Andrew, folks want to know more about the show, where do they go?
OverduePodcast.com is our internet website. We have the schedule for April up there now. We also have a bunch of other links, including, you know what I got burning a hole in my pocket right now is money that I got from our subscribers on Patreon. Patreon.com/OverduePod.
This was a patron's choice. The patrons chose this book.
The patrons chose this book. If you want to throw money into a hole, come on over to Patreon.com. And you get access to our Discord, bonus episode recording, live stream things that we do periodically, which are fun. I think we have one scheduled for the end of this month. Yes.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Think and Grow Rich.
Oh, nice. Oh, yeah. Yeah. We're going to become If Books Should Kill for an episode. I'm excited about that. And yeah, our Stop Homer Time, our long read series about Emily Wilson's translation of Homer's The Iliad, is ongoing now. Get access to all that stuff early. It'll always come out on the main feed eventually, but you get it like weeks to months early if you'd subscribe. So patreon.com/overduepod. Thank you so much to everybody who does subscribe. And if you're a future subscriber, thank you in the future as well.
Intergenerational storytelling.
Yeah. Craig, what are you reading next week?
I'm reading Persepolis by Marjan Satrapi. I'm excited. It's a graphic novel that I've known about it for a while and have thought about reading it for the show and finally decided I'm going to read it for the show.
I wonder how many holes are in it. You're going to have to keep track of how many holes.
I will try to keep track.
Because I think this book probably holds the record for the book we've read with the most holes in it, but I guess I haven't been keeping track this whole time. I'll have to go back through the back catalog and make sure there's not a book that has more holes.
Someone may have already done this research. If you've done this research, please let us know.
All right, everybody. Thank you for listening to our show. And until we talk to you next week, please try to be happy.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.